Hey, Vince and Jane here from the SEER team, Keller Williamson. We thought we'd go through a couple of items of interest here. We often get articles that are put out by Inman, which is a real estate industry trade publication. And thought maybe today we'd go through a couple of the items that came up and give our little perspective on that. So, hey, Jane, what do we have up today?
So we're talking about the seven myths buyers actually believe. This article is written by Karen Mears. It's pretty good. So the first one is agents are paid a salary by the brokerage and the commission is extra.
Boy, that's a funny one.
Yes, so that is so not true. Commissions are paid to the brokerage depending on the contract that the agent has with the broker. There's a split. You get part of that. And then on top of that, we have to pay taxes. We have overhead we have to pay, fees.
Yeah, I like to say very few agents are paid a salary from the brokerage. There are a couple of brokerages. Redfin is one of them, which they have hired people to become their agents,
Right. Okay,
for them. They're actually employees. But for the most part, I'd say 99% of all the agents you meet are not paid any kind of salary from that brokerage.
Correct. That's why when you see people get into the real estate business and they're surprised how hard it is to make money, that's why there's an 85% dropout rate in the first 2 years, because it is commission-based. So if you're going to reach out to an agent to show properties, make sure that you're truly, really want to look at properties. So you're actually in the process of buying something because you are wasting their time. You're just walking around just looking at houses to just like to look at them.
Yeah, because they're not going to pay for that.
There you go. Go to an open house.
We're only going to, just so you know, our commission, the commission you see, goes to the brokerage,
yes.
And the brokerage then will give a portion of that back to the agent, okay? And that's actually what the agent gets, and then the agent has their expenses they have to take out of that. So a lot of times you think that realtors getting paid all this commission, there's a lot of hands in the till before the money actually ends up in the agent's hands. And by the way, the agent doesn't get any of the money unless you settle, so. No matter all that work you put in, trying to get the house under contract, trying to get through inspections, everything else like that, if you never go to settlement, you don't get paid anything.
Correct. Okay, so the next one is every home that has a for sale sign can be found on a consumer's website.
Read that again.
It says every home that's for sale can be found on a consumer's website.
Oh, they're talking about these are the myths.
Right.
So, well, yes. That's not necessarily true. They're not always on the consumer's website. In fact, a lot of the homes that you see on places like Zillow and Trulia, the data is not up to date. And so it may say it's for sale, but more than likely it's probably either under contract or sold. I mean, it can be.
Right.
So.
And even the information that they provide on those websites are not correct. As we see people get upset when they see this estimate on Zillow. As Vince says, Zillow's never been in your house. So it's really not very accurate. So those are other things to keep in mind when you're looking at some of the information. They're not always correct information.
Yeah, Zillow's a good place to start. If you're just beginning your search, Zillow's got an easy user interface. You get on there, you put a couple of areas in, and it pulls up an idea of the types of homes you may see in the area and the neighborhoods. But all that data may not necessarily be up to date and accurate. That's why you then start working with an agent who can put you within a portal within their own MLS. Now, the MLS data is accurate, current, up-to-date, and is reflective of what's really going on in the marketplace.
Correct. All right. So number three, there's nothing wrong with calling a listing agent to see if homes we are interested in for, there's nothing wrong with calling a listing agent to see if the homes we are interested in if our agent's not available.
Now that can be problematic.
Yes, absolutely. So the problem is that if you call the listing agent without your agent you're working with, no. So if that happens, if I can't show a house and I call the listing agent and ask if they can show it, and they will willing to do that, that's one thing. But to do it on your own. At that point, your agent might not be able to represent you through the transaction. Is that the listing agent has claimed that they are procuring clause, and you are now their client.
Yeah, so you got a couple things to keep in mind here. One, you know, if you don't have an agent and you call the listing agent up to see a house, and you're actually then like that house and want to make an offer for it, that listing agent is going to be the one that's going to be writing the offer. Okay, so now you're going to have the agent who's representing the seller now represent you.
Correct.
And your interests may not be represented 100% to your benefit. So that's the one thing. The other thing to keep in mind is that, as Jane mentioned, if just because your agent's not available, you go and call a listing agent, and that listing agent shows you the property, and that's the one you make an offer on. Even if it's your buyer's agent who makes that offer, the listing agent can claim payment or that commission, that buyer's side commission, because they will have something known as procuring cause, meaning they're the ones that influence you to procure the home, and therefore should be compensated. So it puts a lot of confusion into a transaction. So if you have an agent, you know, our suggestion would be, you know, talk to that agent, figure out what you can do to look at that property. If the agent's not immediately available, you know, call the agent and see if the agent can at least call the listing agent and say, I've got somebody that's interested, and figure out what kind of arrangements can be made for you to see the property. But if you just do this on your own, you could open yourselves up to really just unpleasantness throughout the transaction.
Yes, we did. We're very, we spend a lot of time of our knowledge of the marketplace, and when we take on a client, we want to educate them of the process and understand what they're purchasing. We want to make sure they understand the obstacles and just make sure it's a good fit for them. And I suppose not all agents work that way. So, definitely, make sure that you do not call another agent if you're already working with one.
Yeah. What's our next myth?
Our fourth is a house passes or fails an inspection.
That's a good one, because a lot of times you'll hear this, and it'll be whatever type of inspection, you know, it passed the home inspection, or it failed the radon inspection, or something. What you'll hear in our area is stucco is a big thing which gets inspected, so you say it passed the stucco inspection. Okay. There is no pass or fail for home inspection.
Correct.
Okay, what really happens in a home inspection, Jane?
So a home inspection is that you hire an inspector to go through and find maybe some things that could be wrong with the house. They check the home. We do radon tests in our area. We do wood for termites. So all home inspectors will find stuff on homes. That's what their job is. It can be as little as like maybe an outlet could be wrong, or stuff might not be too hot, too not high enough, or too small. Railings might not be the right height, all kinds of things. So just keep in mind, they will find stuff, but it could be a matter of something that's really minor to something that's major.
Yeah, so it's not like they go through and give a stamp of approval on a home to say it passes. What they do is they will point out what they would consider material defects. That's on my ways. That's okay. We're driving, so. So what they will do is they're going to be looking for certain types of defects. They'll be looking for material defects.
Yes.
They'll be looking for safety items. They will look for items of maintenance. Okay. So they're just going to identify those, and they will point those out, and they may give you some indication of the severity of that defect. And some inspectors may give you some ballpark estimate of what that defect would cost to be corrected. Okay. So it isn't as though it passes or fails.
Right.
Okay? And you could have an inspection report that has all sorts of defects, and you still have a buyer that accepts the house.
Right.
And you have some reports that come back, and there's hardly anything wrong with the house, and you get buyers that want to reject it.
Right.
And use the inspections as a way to reject it.
And it also is a good idea when you do a home inspection that you are there, because the home inspector will show you how to maintain your home. Like, they'll show you how to take out your air filter, your furnace, and put that back in. Just showing you little maintenance things to be aware of as a homeowner, because every home is different.
Yeah, so they don't pass or fail. Even like a stucco inspection doesn't pass or fail. They just identify areas that are either higher levels of whatever the tolerance they're looking for. Either stucco, they're looking for moisture, and whether or not, what the level is. If it's radon, they're looking for a certain level that's been, approved by the EPA. So nothing really passes or fails.
So number five, a buyer can and should ask for every item found on the inspection report to be fixed, whether it's an actual repair or even a cosmetic in nature.
That's not true. That clearly you don't want to be asking for everything that's on the inspection report. You don't want to nitpick on these things.
Right. You just want safety and major repair items.
No house is perfect. Even a brand new house has a list, a punch list of defects that you go through in new construction. So.
And usually your seller's disclosure will list items that are defect or have been, might have been problematic. So you're aware the house is priced for that problematic item. Also, the house is priced for the condition it looks. So if there's a house full of wallpaper, it's already been priced for the wallpaper in there. So they're not going to pay to remove that. They've already given you that price with that condition.
You've already seen some of that. So if you think you're going to get everything on an inspection report, that's going to be highly unlikely. And so you're going to start into a difficult negotiation. You're going to come in and ask for everything. The seller feels as though they've already probably done a certain amount to get the home repaired. They've priced it a certain way. We don't know what it is you've done as far as you're negotiating on pricing. But if you beat them up on price and then do a home inspection and then ask for more, more than likely the seller is going to say no. And then you're going to be in a position of, are you going to either accept the house the way it is or whether repairs they're going to agree to, or are you going to terminate and go back to the drawing board and start looking again?
Okay.
Look for the big ticket things.
Big ticket things. Number six, the lower I offer, the more the seller will come off their asking price.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily happened. Sometimes if you lowball them, you may not hear back from that seller, period.
They will refuse to sell you the house, you didn't decide to come back up. I've had to have one incident. My first was in the business that the buyer's father convinced her to go in way too low, and it got the seller so upset they refused to sell the house when they came to realize it was a bad thing to do. So.
Normally, you want to be careful on the pricing.
Normally we go through comps. Properties are sold in the area within the last, 90 days to 6 months, just so show what the price is. You will never overpay for a house because it has to be appraised by the bank if you're using a mortgage.
Yeah, I think what we want to keep in mind is that you want to be able to come in based upon what's going on with the marketplace. So if the home has just come on the market, you doing something as a lowball offer is just not going to be well received. And you're not going to get the house because somebody could probably come in with a better offer that's priced, more in accordance with what the seller believes the value is. So now you will have some negotiating power and pricing power if the home has been on the market for a period of time. So if the home has been on the market for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and they haven't had any price reductions, then you're going to have some power, or at least ability, if you come in with a lower price, to at least see them move off of where they're at and use that as a justification. But, coming in real low does not necessarily mean the seller is going to go and drop their price off. They could be pretty resistant and have a firm price in their mind of what they want, and they're going to hold to that.
Okay, so the next one, 7. The bank will send someone out to tell me if I'm paying too much. Not really.
The bank is really looking for, the bank is going to send an appraiser out who is independent. They are not affiliated with the bank, so ever since the financial crisis, they separated those duties. So the banks have sent somebody out who's considered an independent, and it'll be objective, but they're going to give a subjective idea of valuation of the price of a home.
Yeah. So you, like I said, you'll never overpay for the house because the bank is going to make sure that the appraiser is going to actually appraise the house at market value.
Well, the bank is going to make sure that the money they're lending, there's enough position in the home for them to be able to justify the loan amount they're going to be making. So you can't just go and willy-nilly offer some big high price and think that the bank is going to automatically grant you that loan for that. They want to make sure that the valuation for that home is in alignment with what's going on with the rest of the marketplace and for that neighborhood, for that property. So there is going to be a little bit of check and balance on there.
Yeah. So those are the seven myths that buyers actually believe. So if there's any other questions you guys have that you would want us to answer, we would love to be able to answer those questions for you. We love to pick in the minds of buyers and sellers all the time.
Yeah, so check us out on our website. You know, it's www.thesearteam.com. And this is Vince and Jane, and have a great day.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing from you.
Well, good day. Vince and Jane here from the SEER team at Keller Williams, just outside of Philadelphia. Hey, we've got a nice little episode today. Talk about this another article that we pulled from Inman. And Jane, what's the article? Who's the author and where's the article from?
Okay, so the article's name is Five Outdated Sellers Beliefs Agents Should Debunk. This was written by Carl Medford. It's talking about HGTV and online information and how it shifts things of the ground rules in real estate sales. So, you know, we're on top of this is the way we run our business. Some of the, I would say, seasoned older agents are maybe not more internet savvy. You have to understand that these are the changes that our buyers and sellers are looking at now.
Yeah, really, the advent, you know, with HGTV and the advent of the digital presentation of homes has really changed the whole marketplace. And so this article starts to talk a little bit about that, and we'll elaborate that, on that. So what's our first outdated belief?
Right, so three fundamental changes. Because change one, the advent of HGTV. So it talks about how buyers, or most people watch HGTV a lot, and what they see on TV is what they want to purchase in the home that they're looking for. So one, a couple things, we don't have to set the expectation when work with buyers, depending what their price point is, to actually what they're seeing out there on TV. Because it is TV, remember, it's not sometimes real, you know, to what you're seeing.
Yeah, so there is an element of this, how home has been staged and presented for TV. Also time frames on things that have been done. We also see, like, you watch on TV and some of these shows how everybody wants to take out a wall in half these places that they're looking at, and not every home can have a wall removed without it falling down or you requiring a substantial amount of engineering work to make sure that you get the right supports put in place. So we've got to temper some of that expectation.
Yep, absolutely. So, and when we're working with buyers, we're always looking at the resale value of a property. So if somebody's purchased a home, we want to make sure we can turn around and sell it on a very an easy, timely manner. So there could be obstacles that are on the property that you just can't change. Maybe a location or maybe a water tower in the backyard. And those things on HGT, they might show you this gorgeous home, but they're not showing you the views that maybe there's a railroad track in the back, and they're not showing you that. So those are kind of things that we want to point out to our buyers before they purchase. These could be obstacles that they could happen having a hard time selling the house.
Yeah, don't fall in love with the house because the way it looks on the inside. There's a lot of different dynamics. So what else did you say?
So change to the advent of the mobile devices in the internet. So most buyers, they're on the internet shopping. They will make a decision in 10 seconds. If they don't like the house, they go to the next one, and they actually don't come back to it.
Yeah, they're sitting on their in their home, in their pajamas, on their couch, and they're on Zillow or Trulia or any of the other sites, and they're looking through these different homes, and they're going, not this one. They're making very, very fast decisions based upon just information they see. Mostly it's the picture. They may not even read anything about the description. They may not look anywhere in the broader location. They're just going to say, oh, that one's got wallpaper. I refuse to buy a house with wallpaper, and move on. And you've lost them as a potential buyer, you know, if your home isn't presented well.
Right. I mean, sometimes some sellers will have this attitude, well, it's good enough for me, it's good enough for them. And that's not the way it is. We are changing your house to a marketing entity. So we want to make sure that when we put our houses in the market that we're showing the best features of the home, and we're also making it more appealing to the masses out there.
And you have to remember, what's funny thing is that a lot of these buyers are relying on these devices, you know, to look for the home, research the home. They've got a lot of information available to them. What we find often kind of humorous is they'll come to an open house, they'll have their device in their hand, and they'll be looking through the open house looking at their device as opposed to looking at the house.
Right.
So they look at the pictures on their device as they walk through the house, and it's like, okay, you can put the device down now, you're actually at the location, take a look at the house and how it fits within what you're looking for as your criteria.
Right, and the article also mentions that excluding the houses online, and if they make the point, one of them were already started being a commitment to it. So I made the short list.
It's important. If you get that appointment, the way the market is now, okay, they're allocating something far more important that very few people have right now is time. Okay, so they've made a conscious decision to reserve time out of their calendar, out of their schedule, to come and physically see your house. Okay, that's significant. It means they already mentally have some predisposition to think this could be the one.
Yeah, so our next thing is change. Third change is the internet real estate sites. We're talking Realtor.com, Zillow, Trulia. So before we used to have three types of buyers. Top tier buyers that would buy a turnkey ready type home. Mid-level buyers, they buy a house that they would like, but they can see beyond some of the condition and do it themselves. And the last would be flippers and contractors. And they're seeing that middle tier buyer is actually kind of going away. Most buyers are the top tier. They want things moved and ready. They don't want to have to deal with painting or, you know, put in the new kitchen or whatnot.
So here's where we have really the conflict that's taking place in the market right now. The majority of the homes out there are owned, I would say, by baby boomers or the silent generation. They probably own the majority of homes out there, maybe 70% of the homes. When they bought homes, the majority of those buyers bought homes with the intent of making it into what they wanted. So the home didn't have all of the amenities that people would want. It wasn't decorated the way they wanted. But they knew that they could work their way into that, and they would make that house into what they wanted. And so they've spent the last 20 or 30 years doing that with a home. When they go to sell the house, they're thinking to themselves, well, I don't really need to make my house all perfect, move-in ready, up to the current decor and standards, because I didn't need that when I bought my house. Mm-hmm. However, the buyers today are wanting the HGTV look, the Pottery Barn look. They want they don't want just granite, they want quartz. They want all the soft clothes, they want all the grays, you know, they want all of the open concept. And so that's a conflict. You've got buyers looking for a certain product and sellers saying, well, they can make it into that, and that makes it difficult now to have a deal come together.
Right, right. So the next thing is talking about is the five sellers' myths. So the first one is, the first myth is, I do not need to have a listing agent visit my home until I'm ready, which is not true. If anybody's listening to us, we'd like to see them ahead of time, 6 months to a year, because there's things that we want to do, set the expectation, get the house ready for, put on market. Want to talk about that more of it?
Well, I want to, you know, this is really part of our service that we offer, and we think our value add is, we want to make sure that the home is going to be positioned right for the marketplace. So we want to come in early and find out, how old are your mechanicals? You know, are there elements of the decor that could be updated? We want to give you enough time in order to prepare the home for the market. Do you need to declutter? Do you need to get some people in there to remove some of the items you have in your house? Do you want to make sure that, you know, the roof is up to snuff, the HVAC system is up to snuff? You know, do we need to do any repairs? You don't want to have to be rushing through that. You want to have time to prepare, time to find the resources, time to find the money, okay, and figure out what your game plan is going to be. Instead of just calling and say 3 weeks before you open the market, hammering my home on the market, and it's nowhere near ready.
Right.
How about laying out a plan?
We just can't put a sign out there. Selling your house is an invasion of your privacy. It's not a fun process to do. So we're all about the Band-Aid method. Let's rip it off, get it done early. So we get the house prepared. We give you time to do it. You can declutter and all that stuff. So number two, I do not need to upgrade the property for sale. So basically, you know, you really don't need to upgrade it, but we do things like, we do a lot of things with paint, letter decluttering, you know, moving stuff out of the house. We also like to start with the mechanics. We got to make sure the mechanics are fine. Trust me, people are not going to want to buy your stained carpet. So do we need to replace carpet because they're stained or they're worn? We have to look at all these things and if it's really worth us to do that.
Giving an allowance for that is really not the answer. People are going to look at the carpet and they're just going to turn away. Here's what we often find with sellers. It's you know, more common than deficiencies that your home has and think that they're going to want to pony up the money to fix the roof, fix the HVAC, update the kitchen. It isn't going to happen. Your house will sit.
And a rule of thumb with us is that, you know, we find that when buyers, especially first-time buyers or our millennial buyers, when they see something and they think the cost of the replacement of it is 10 times the amount that it actually is. So that's the other thing. So, yeah, so all these are really
important. They don't really have the skills.
Right.
They're fairly void of any kind of skills or do-it-yourself type of abilities.
They don't have the time.
A lot of them are dual income. They're both
young
working.
Families. Yeah. Yep, all that good stuff. So, yeah, so it's really important. And we go through that, and we have ways to get the property updated and upgraded. That's not going to cost you a lot. So don't be deterred that, I can't put my house on the market because I have to do all this stuff. Trust me, we get a plan. We've got people that can do this, and we can actually do it at a decent economic pricing.
And then in the end, your house will be more attractive.
It will
be. Because you're going to be competing against somebody else who didn't do that.
And is not being educated on that. Number three, I need open houses to sell my home. So Vince and I, we are really proactive about doing open houses for a couple reasons. One, you know, as real estate agents, we work with many different buyers, and sometimes it's hard for us to be able to take them out to see houses, so they can use one as an open house as initial showing. If they want to do a second showing, sometimes use an open house for that. Also, Vince and I, we know a lot about your property, and who else can sell that property to a buyer? Answer those questions is us, because we have that information. As a buyer's agent, they're just reading the MLS sheet. They don't have the information. Sometimes you try and proactively call the buyer's agent and tell them the special features about the house if they remember or write it down.
We find that in many instances of the homes that we are selling, that we have listed, that we are in contact with that buyer. They're represented by somebody else.
Yep.
That's fine. But we are in contact with that buyer, usually through an open house, in which we have an opportunity to engage with them, explain to them about the features of the home, the characteristics of the home, answer any questions they have. More importantly, we can address any objections they may have, because we've already been prepared for what we think are, you know, the potential objections that somebody's going to bring up about a property, and we already have a response ready for that. And we can be ready with an answer, as opposed to if they're relying on their buyer's agent for that information, that buyer's agent may not be as diligent in getting that property sold as we are.
Right. So the fourth one, I need many open house signs at multiple key intersections. Not so much now with the way that the apps that we have, you know, people come to your open house, they will program your address and their GPS to get there. We would have a few signs to navigate you through, but we're not going to put, you know, 10, 15 signs out. It's rare that we get somebody come to our open house by seeing our open house signs.
Yeah, we're not actually seeing that the drive-by, see the sign, oh, let's go check out the house. Those aren't necessarily the types of buyers that are coming to buy your house anyway. But people who are coming to the open house have made a specific plan of their day to go and look at that open house. The app has told them these are the open houses that have the homes, or these open houses are the homes that fit your characteristics, and they are making a specific trip to see your home.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so that's how, I mean, I know some people are not, you know, don't feel the open houses are important. We find that they are, and to be able to get buyers in and be out of your house for a few hours on a Sunday, it just definitely is worth it to us to get your house sold and get onto the next project. Number five, if a buyer really wants my house, they'll pay more than the market value.
No.
Nope.
That won't happen.
No. Nobody really wants to. We're not in California. People are overpaying for properties.
If they really want your house, okay, and it's competitive and you have other people want your house as well, you know, that's a nice situation. You maybe have multiple offers. Multiple offers doesn't necessarily mean it's going over the asking price either. You can have multiple offers that still come in below ask or at ask.
Yep, and also the offer is about the condition of the offer. It's not all about the price. It's about the financing. How strong is the buyer at financing? Also about if they chose inspections, when they want to close. An offer is more than just the price.
And the buyers, you may find some buyers that may want to pay more for the house, okay, because they really, really like it. But they're going to do so reluctantly. They really don't want to, but they may be forced to. We've got a lot of buyers. buyers right now who are in this situation where they've seen home prices rise fairly dramatically over the past 4 or 5 years. And they're getting some level of sticker shock. So the price has already been elevated because the market has dictated such. So you're already asking a fairly significant amount for the house. And then somebody may come in, or may be competitive, they may be forced to offer more than what the asking price is, and they're not pleased about that because it's costing them more money, their payment's going to be higher.
Right. So, and it also has to appraise. It has to appraise. So the, you know, the banks are going to have an appraiser come out, and that it's a person that's going to look at that and check comparables and the quality of your house and the upgrades and see if that value is there.
Yeah, you may have rare instances where that occurs. I'm not going to say it doesn't occur, where somebody really, really wants the house, they'll pay the extra amount for it, but I would not have that as part of a sales strategy for my home.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, those are the things that we read in this article, but, you know, as we mentioned, if you're thinking about selling your house or flirting with that idea, just give us a call. It's a conversation. Invite us in your home. We would love to, you know, elaborate on this and talk to you one-on-one and answer any questions you have. We're always available for answering questions.
That's right. So you can also go to our website, www.thesearteam.com. We've got other blog articles about this. We've got videos about this, and we can really help you out through the process. Yeah.
So if you get a chance, give us a call. Maybe we'll actually meet you at a Starbucks and buy a cup of coffee you like. We always love that. So good. You guys have a great day. We look forward to hearing from you guys.
Hey, it's Jane here from the SEER team of Keller Williams. Hey, we're on our way to San Diego for Brian Buffini's annual Mastermind Summit. So we'll be having some broadcasts coming from there as well in the following week. But as we're on our way to the airport, we want to talk to you about something else that's going on. Jane's in the middle of rereading a book that she read in the past, Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover. Dave Ramsey provides financial advice. He's got a lot of different podcasts, and he's got a radio show, and he's really been helpful in getting people to get their finances in order. So I'm going to ask a few questions to Jane about what she's finding out in the book and also some other things with Dave Ramsey that's helping with us, Jane. So.
Yep, so the book itself, you know, reading finance books are kind of dry. This book actually isn't. It's very easy to read. Last time I read it, I did it in a long weekend. I mean, it's an easy book to read. You can pick it up at the library. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things Dave Ramsey is known for is he hates debt.
Yep.
You know, debt is
killing our country.
Well, and it's really, when you have a lot of debt, you have another master, okay? And that master is not you. That master is the credit card company or the mortgage holder or the bank that's holding your car payment or car loan. And that master is really driving your behavior.
Correct.
So what does Dave want you to do about that, Jane?
So, I mean, one thing, he wants you to try and work on being debt-free. Figure out a budget. Figure out what your monthly budget is. You know, be conservative on that, on all your expenditures. You also like to start spending money with cash if you can. Maybe he has a system, you put your monies in envelopes and, you know, categorize them for, like, entertainment, groceries, those types of things. I mean, the mortgage payment, you're not going to want to put in cash, but that type of stuff. Then he talks about getting rid of, if you have any credit cards, get rid of the credit card debt. And he mentions to find the lowest balance out of all your credit cards, heavily go at it, and try a little bit of extra on that money, on that balance. When that credit card is paid off, the monthly payment you had on that, put on the next lowest balance, and just keep on doing it until you get rid of all your credit card debt.
It's called a snowball effect. Mm-hmm. So you start small, like a snowball, and then as it rolls downhill, it starts getting bigger and bigger, and you start then getting a handle on this debt and feeling as though it's not overwhelming.
Correct. So it's a pretty neat concept to do. I mean, you listen to his podcast, there's people talking about, you know, they had, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 in credit card debt. They really did a budget, lived on it. They both partners were on it together on this plan, and they've gotten rid of the debt in a year, 18 months, and they feel really good on that. The next step is to have emergency fund. Once you have at least 6 months emergency fund in a savings account, and that's for your living costs for 6 months. So if something happens, you get laid off from your job, or some emergency comes that you have money that you can draw out of and replace when you get through that emergency.
And you're not using credit cards for that emergency.
Correct.
Which is what a lot of people do, and then they can never get themselves under from under that whole credit card overhang.
Yep. And the one thing that really amazed me this time, I was reading the book, I don't know why I picked it up last time, Vince and I don't do this. We don't lease our cars. We don't believe in leasing cars. We drive, we actually buy our cars, we drive until they actually die or they cost us too much to run. So we should keep our cars for 8 to 10 years, would you say, Vince?
Or more.
Or more. So he said that he actually figured out how much it costs for somebody to lease a car. So when you lease a car, you're actually renting a car for 3 years, you're paying 17% interest on that payment. Which is crazy. You're better off if you can't afford a brand new car. He also doesn't like new cars. He thinks you should buy cars that are 2 to 3 years old because the values of cars are constantly going down. So he talks about instead of leasing a car, buy a car that's going to fit your budget. Maybe buy something that's, you know, maybe $8,000-$10,000 because you're going to have to put a down payment on the lease and use that car. You know, until it dies, and then save up the money on the side so you can actually afford a nicer car so you can drive that around, but not to lease.
So why this has some relevance with us we're in the real estate business is that we've got a lot of people with a lot of debt, and it's keeping them from being able to get a mortgage.
Correct.
You know, Dave Ramsey does understand and realize that people often do have to borrow in order to get a house, but he's going to advise you as well to try to put as much down as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have PMI or private mortgage insurance that's an additional payment on the house.
Right.
So you have some equity in the house in case you have to sell the house. You have some proceeds that remain after the sale in the event you have to sell early.
Right.
And as well as this debt overhang is really keeping people from getting houses.
Correct.
You know, we know that the student loan issue is huge. I mean, there's a lot of people carrying a lot of student loan debt. You know, and there are ways for you to start to work it off. Not to have it forgiven, not to have the government come in and try to pay it for you, but by using a method similar to what Dave Ramsey advocates, you too can get yourself working towards reducing that debt load, and it also then positions you so that you actually could become a homeowner, because homeownership is the tried and true way of building wealth in this country. Yep. And as individuals.
It does. And Dave mentioned that your monthly payment should be around about 25% of your monthly budget. So, you know, as Vince and I, you know, we see a lot of people that want to buy homes. We try to encourage people to talk to a financial planner, make a monthly budget, and to put up those numbers, because we just don't want anybody to be house poor. It's just not the way to live your life. But
it's stressful. Why get a house of which you can't afford either the furniture in it, or you can't afford to do anything else in your life.
Right. And there's all different price points of properties that are in all different areas that you can afford. You don't need the high-end house.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a high-end house. You know, I mean, why can't you buy something you afford? There's a lot of houses. I mean, it's not, you're not going to live in there forever. Majority of our clients stay in their homes 5 to 7 years. So, I mean, so we always like to do baby steps, you know, when we're meeting with people. We like to have a buyer's consultation, figure what their monthly budget is. And then if it's doable for them to purchase a house today. If it's not, we'll put them on a plan that we can work on something. Sometimes we'll meet somebody that really can't afford a house or they should wait, and then they'll have to wait 6 to 9 months. 6 to 9 months is nothing. We'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, so something to think about with, you know, look at this book. A lot of very good advice in there. Everybody can learn something from it. Nobody is perfect in their finances.
Nope.
There's always something new to do. Once you get rid of your debt, then you can start working off paying off your house in its entirety. Then you can start working on investments and your retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a defined process which is going to be helpful for you to follow. So we highly recommend that.
Yep. And also, you know, Vince and I spend a lot of time in our cars, as you know. I would just listen to his podcast. If you don't have time to read the book, listen to his podcast. There's a lot of good information. It will actually get you motivated to read the book. But it's, you know, it's amazing to hear people's stories. People like all of us that have gotten ourselves in a pickle with our finances. And we just need a little bit of help to get us out of that, underneath that debt, and to have that freedom.
So one of the reasons why we're talking about this and why we believe in this is that we've also been identified and selected by Dave Ramsey to be part of their endorsed local provider program. So you can go on to Dave Ramsey's site, and when people are looking for a realtor or they're looking for a financial advisor, you want to look for somebody that's been vetted, somebody that's trusted, somebody that's going to be able to demonstrate these characteristics and believe in the concepts of sound financial management that's advocated by Dave Ramsey and his organization. So he goes through and his team, and they identify those companies and individuals that can provide that same level of service. So we've been identified and selected as that, as an endorsed local provider.
Yep.
And we're honored that we've been selected as such, and it just reinforces the fact that we believe in home ownership, but we also believe in financially responsible home ownership.
And also Dave Ramsey's in about the plan. You know, we're all about the plan on our team here. We like to put a plan in place if you're a buyer or a seller. So we really like that, the fact that we're in sync on our mindset and how things need to be done. We don't like people to rush into properties, so we'd like to take our time to make a methodical decision on your home purchase.
So that's our update for today. We'll have a, you know, like I said, we'll tell you what's going on with Brian Buffini and Mastermind out there in San Diego. We're excited about that. And stay tuned, and hopefully we can provide you other information. So if you have any questions about, you know, real estate, how we can help you, or how we can help you with the current real estate you have, just making it better, okay?
Right.
Do not hesitate to reach out to us. Contact us on, you know, Facebook, web, text, phone. We're accessible in many different ways.
Yeah,
so
we would absolutely love to hear from you. You know, we're just calling, reaching out, just ask us questions. It's not committing you to work with us, but we'd love to be able to help people through the process.
Yeah.
So have a good day, everybody. We'll be in touch. Take care.
Have a great day.